This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Presidential inaugurations are by definition historic events. Yesterday, of course, was historic for seeing the first woman inaugurated into national office when Kamala Harris became vice president. But the moment when Joe Biden placed his hand on an enormous Bible and took the oath of office, that moment was arguably most historic for how ordinary it was. Coming 2 weeks after a violent mob brawled with police and smashed their way into the Capitol building, attempting to prevent the certification of Biden's victory. And that insurrection coming after 2 months of the president refusing to accept the results of what 50 state legislatures and scores of courts determined was a free and fair election. All that reminded us that a peaceful transfer of power, one of the foundational virtues of the form of government America gave to the world, that transfer is something we can no longer take for granted. President Biden both acknowledged this and sought to move past it in an inaugural address focused on unity.
Through civil war, the Great Depression, World War, 9/11, through struggle, sacrifice, and setbacks, our better angels have always prevailed. In each of these moments, enough of us have come together to carry all of us forward. And we can do that now. History, faith, and reason show the way of unity. We can see each other not as adversaries, but as neighbors. We can treat each other with dignity and respect. We can join forces, stop the shouting, and lower the temperature. For without unity, there is no peace. Only bitterness and fury. No progress. Only exhausting outrage. No nation. Only a state of chaos. This is our historic moment of crisis and challenge. And unity is the path forward. And we must meet this moment as the United States of America.
Listeners, we want to hear how you are meeting this moment. Our lines are open from now until the end of the show. The number to call is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. We want to hear from you. How are you feeling on this first full day of the new Biden administration? Are you optimistic? Are you worried? What are your hopes for the new administration? Or if you have a question for our guests, give us a call, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Joining us now to help preview the Biden administration is Jeremy Hobson. He's the former host of NPR's Here and Now and Marketplace. He's also a native of Urbana, Illinois. Jeremy, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for joining us on your home state show.
It is great to be with you. And by the way, also on the 21st day of the 21st year of the 21st century.
There you go. I love the dates aligning like that. We also have with us Lynn Sweet, Washington Bureau Chief for the Chicago Sun-Times. Lynn, glad to have you back as well.
And thanks so much for having me.
Lynn, I want to begin with you. You are based in Washington, D.C. You were in the city during the insurrection on January 6th. You were in the city yesterday during the inauguration. Can you describe what it's felt like in D.C. in the lead up to this very unusual inauguration?
Well, there are two D.C.s. The residential part is untouched. You wouldn't see, it's not highly militarized. You wouldn't know that anything had happened or that there's any difference. So that's just the reality. But when you do go downtown, you do see the barricades, the fortress-like provisions made in the wake of the riot. I went and visited with members of the Illinois National Guard in Washington early Sunday morning. They were staying and are staying at a hotel downtown, and I had to park my car outside of a checkpoint because that's how secure the city is. And of course, everybody saw on TV and how this was an inauguration notable because people were told to stay away and they did. I guess a byproduct is we won't have any dispute about the crowd count.
No, unlike we did 4 years ago, a dispute that led to the phrase alternative facts entering the lexicon. Jeremy, you were co-host of NPR's Here and Now throughout the Trump administration until you left the show in October. I don't want to spend too much time looking back. We're looking forward today. But as President Trump leaves office and the Biden administration enters, can you talk about what it was like covering the Trump administration for 4 years and how you think that might change for the media with the Biden administration?
Yeah, I would say, you know, I'm sure that Lynn would agree with this. The last four and really 5 years, because Trump came on the scene, you know, at least more than a year before he became president. But it's been a completely different world in the media. First of all, you know, I was hosting a show in the middle of the day. A lot of stuff happens in the middle of the day. Trump loved to, you know, send off a tweet, maybe firing a key cabinet member in the middle of the day, or maybe he was going to enact some major policy. And, you know, it was just a very different pace than what existed before in the Obama years, even in the George W. Bush years. It was just like, unlike anything. I remember, you know, on the election night 4 years ago, we decided that the next day we were going to do a live 4-hour version of Here and Now instead of just the 2 hours. And we thought, oh, well, we'll just bring all these guests on, sort of assuming that Hillary Clinton was going to win. And then after that, this big buildup to the election, which is always a crazy time in journalism, the day after, then everything will calm down. Well, it didn't. It never calmed down for the entire period of time that we were.
Nope, and we might have just had a little hiccup in Jeremy's signal there. So
we're in a new era.
Oh, there we are.
It feels sort of normal. It feels like it did before. Maybe it will be, maybe it won't be, but definitely it's going to be very different.
Lynn, what about you? What do you think of, I mean, you've been through a lot of administrations now. How did the last 4, 5, 6 years compare to what came before, and what are you expecting going forward?
Well, what we're going to have is what we might call more of a regular order. We're not going to have a government by tweet. You're going to have a more of a bureaucracy in place for whatever you think of process. Sometimes it works better when you have an orderly way that no policy is developed, or you know there is some point of saying that we might have too much of it. But what you don't have, and the biggest contrast I could sum up in one word: chaos. Then no chaos now. So even though there will be healthy debates, the partisan divide will not be bridged. You may at least have a more orderly path in development of policy. And you also have a consistent sense of principles that the Biden administration wants to advance. So there will be opposition to some of the things Biden is going to do, of course. He'll have pressure from within his own party on the left as he seeks to find a compromise with Republicans. But this whole procedure just will be more focused, goal-oriented in a way that you could understand more. And certainly you won't have, I think, the flagrant ethical issues that came up in the Trump administration.
Lynn, I also want to ask you, yesterday's inauguration was historic. As I mentioned earlier, we saw the first woman, also the first person of South Asian descent and Jamaican heritage, to be sworn in as vice president. Meanwhile, President Biden is coming into office as the oldest person to be sworn in to that job at 78. I'm curious, what stood out to you as you were watching the inaugural ceremonies and President Biden's speech?
Okay, a few takeaways is that the nation is going to be a lot more interested in the Vice President Harris than the nation was interested in Vice President Pence. Part of it is because of Biden's age, and you never know what's going to happen. But also, I see her as an immediate Democratic front runner for the next open Democratic primary. She's also just a more interesting person and historic. So it went through my mind that there is going to be a devoted, and I think when I've looked at some of the early announcement, there is going to be a bigger devoted press corps to covering what Kamala Harris does. The other thing that went through my mind, and I'm not saying this is the biggest thing, but one of the hallmarks of the Trump White House was how devoid it was of activity. There was nothing in the arts, nothing in the humanities. where in the Obama White House, it was like a regular entertainment venue. They had programs. They had artists come in. All of this ended under Trump. And certainly I would expect one way or another to have a revival of that aspect in the Biden White House. A thing as small as the Kennedy Center Honors, which usually is a star-packed event with people from all across the arts world. The Trumps never even went to it in the years they were in the White House, thinking perhaps correctly they wouldn't be welcome. But they didn't even try. So I think you also will have people that will be, I mean, I'm telling our listeners these are not necessarily the most important thoughts about the important issues of the day, including addressing the COVID pandemic. But I did look at the four principles and think they are going to be more a part of the fabric of the city. Trump never left, except for a fundraiser, the White House to go out and get a hamburger somewhere. The man loved hamburgers. We've got joints all over town. He went golfing at his properties. It was a very constricted world. And I was thinking they, like the Obamas, would probably be out and about more, and to a degree, George and Laura Bush and Bill and Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, although famously Biden lived in Delaware for much of his time, or most all of his time in the Senate, and commuted on the Amtrak. I'm also thinking you mentioned those White House events, and I remember seeing a YouTube video of a poetry night, poetry night early on at the White House, and there was this guy who had this crazy idea about a rap song about the Founding Fathers, Alexander Hamilton. That wasn't going anywhere, I thought.
And when you think about stories, and I think about stories I wish I had covered, why didn't I write then that what he's doing now will develop into one of the most famous Broadway hits in just a short time? But, you know, Biden and Jill have 8 years as vice president. That's the other remarkable thing. I've been at events. You know, I don't live that far from the vice president's mansion. Talk about not needing training wheels. The first lady, Jill Biden, is going in knowing exactly what she wants to do, what her themes will be, what her signature issues will be, because she developed them. In the early days of the Obama White House, Michelle Obama was very careful and cautious. Also, her daughters were young, into what she wanted to do and why. Melania Trump, my God, struggled to the end to really be known for something. Her Be Best thing really was neutralized and by her husband's actions. But Joe Biden just is really, really experienced in this line of work. So I, you know, these are some of the things that went through my mind. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, definitely a tone change out of in Washington. Let me reintroduce my guests. Listeners, if you're just tuning in, we're talking about the inauguration, previewing the Biden administration. We've been hearing from Lynn Sweet, Washington bureau chief at the Chicago Sun-Times, and Jeremy Hobson, former host of NPR's Here and Now. We want to take your calls at 800-222-9455. And I'm going to go now to line four. Nancy is calling in. Nancy, thanks for calling. What did you make of what happened yesterday? Oh, I think we lost that call. Let's go then to Tana in rural Menard County. Tana.
Hi. I just feel like I need to tell you who I am. I am a Republican, pro-life, pro-LGBTQ rights, but most of all, above all, a believer in God, the one and only God of all creation. Okay, so yesterday was joyous for me, and I think the reason was because not so much who the actors were, but what was happening, because it was just so overwhelming to me that there had been such violence, such terrible anarchy, 2 weeks prior to this event. And yesterday, the whole thing just built on each other. And I was kind of glad for the crowds not to be there. It kind of helped us to really focus on just exactly the people who were there and what was happening. And for me, it was more meaningful, I guess. I mean, it's too bad. I know people would have loved to have gone, but anyway, I just think the overwhelming thing was the democracy was still there, that freedom was there, And even though there were military all over, they were there understandably not to be reinforced who was getting the individual person. They were there just to protect everybody. And I think, and I understand a little bit, although I think it was really wrong what happened 2 weeks ago, but I understand a little bit why the report of the Army fella not wanting to send in the military was why he felt that way. And I think in one sense, I mean, they should have, the whole plan should have been in place from the beginning that day, what it ended up being. But at any rate, I feel like that was such a demonstration of the fact that we do not have military dictatorships.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you so much for calling in, Tana. We really appreciate hearing your perspective. We need to take a break in about a minute and a half here. I do want to read a few texts we also got from our Text the 21st group. We asked listeners how they were feeling as America turned the page to a new chapter and what their hopes were for the Biden administration. Wilbur from Rantoul said, quote, "I am optimistic. The top priority should be to try to eliminate all of the division amongst too many people. Let's work together and start to heal from the last mess." Meanwhile, Becky from Champaign said, quote, "I can feel the collective breath of fresh air flowing through our country and community. I spoke with my 70-year-old father today at 7 a.m. I could hear the relief in his voice. These last 5 years have aged his heart and mind greatly. Hearing the difference in him today is such a gift I cannot begin to explain." And finally, Randy from rural Peoria said, "I do not believe any other persons are better for this task," but he continued, quote, "I am more afraid for the future of democracy than ever in life. It is very much at risk. People can endure the disagreements over the moon landing, but a disagreement of the kind we had promoted by Trump proves we are more fragile and more able to be taken out than anyone knew. Now it is revealed." We're going to talk about these sentiments and continue taking your calls after a short break. We're speaking with Jeremy Hobson, former host of Here and Now from NPR, as well as Lynn Sweet, Washington bureau chief of the Chicago Sun-Times. The number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. We'll be back after a short break. This is The 21st. Stay with us. This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about yesterday's inauguration of President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris. We're also talking about what's coming in the future. We want to hear from you at 800-222-9455. We're talking about that with Lynn Sweet, who is the Washington bureau chief at the Chicago Sun-Times, and Jeremy Hobson, former host of NPR's Here and Now, and also a native of Urbana, Illinois. And I want to begin, Jeremy, with you. I read a couple of texts from our listeners before the break. We heard a caller who was sort of relieved. There's this vein of optimism and relief among a lot of people out there anyway. But President Biden is taking office with the country extremely divided. We had this insurrection attempt at the Capitol just a couple of weeks ago, and now the Senate is set to begin an impeachment trial of former President Trump. A major theme in Biden's inaugural address was unity, calling for the country to come together. Jeremy, can that be achieved in this political climate?
Well, I think, you know, if you look at the reaction and you listen to some of the reaction this morning on TV, you switch to a one channel and everybody's very excited and optimistic. And then, you know, you go on Fox News this morning and they're questioning every single thing that Biden is talking about doing already. It's not going to be easy for him, but, you know, this is a president who knows the Senate better than any president since the master of the Senate, LBJ. And, you know, he's got relationships going back decades with some of these people, including Mitch McConnell. And if anybody can actually get it done, it could well be him. Now, he has talked about, you know, his major priorities, obviously dealing with the pandemic, dealing with the economic crisis, which, by the way, it seems to be getting worse right now, not better, dealing with racial equity, dealing with climate change, and rebuilding alliances around the world. Some of those things he'll be able to do, you know, without a lot of cooperation, but some of those things he is going to need cooperation. And, you know, I think that, look, this is America. Anything's possible. Maybe people are right to be optimistic about it right now. I just don't think it's going to be easy.
I want to play another clip now from Biden's inaugural address. This is a shorter one. It's him calling for a fresh start. Let's take a listen.
We have never, ever, ever, ever failed in America. We've acted together. And so today, at this time, in this place, let's start afresh, all of us. Let's begin to listen to one another again, hear one another, see one another, show respect to one another. Politics doesn't have to be a raging fire, destroying everything in its path. Every disagreement doesn't have to be a cause for total war. And we must reject the culture in which facts themselves are manipulated and even manufactured.
Jeremy, this is I should say, we got another text from a listener named Samantha that reads, quote, worried stolen presidential election. How can anyone trust the corrupt Democrat? And Jeremy, this is a sentiment that's out there. I mean, we should maybe point out there is no evidence of a stolen election. President Trump and his team won just one out of more than 60 court cases related to alleged election fraud. But this texter prompts an important discussion. This country is divided. And can we get to a place where we have a shared reality, where facts are facts and not alternative facts? We heard Lynn mention earlier about the crowd
right,
size
like
at the inauguration.
I'd like to weigh in on this after.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Jeremy, point. and then Lynn, please go ahead.
Yeah. I hope so. I know that already on these right wing social media sites like Parler today, there are people who are calling into question what happened yesterday. But there's also a story I read this morning about the fact that many believers in the QAnon conspiracy theory thought that that the inauguration would not go forward, would not actually be able to happen yesterday, that the Democrats would all be rounded up, in Washington. Obviously, that didn't happen. Maybe that, punctures the bubble of insanity that existed. But I hope that we can have media sources that are trusted by all sides. It's what I always tried to do. At Here and Now and at NPR is try to make sure that this was we were putting out information that was factual, that was fair, and that people could listen to on all sides and say, okay, I may not agree with what this politician did, but I know that the news that I just got was correct. So I hope so, but we'll see.
Lynn, what's your perspective on that?
Okay. I also think we need to do a much better job of explaining, and I hope the person who asked the question can hear me out. It isn't good enough, and I don't mean any disrespect to anyone here, just to say there were 60 cases and there was no fraud, because not all the cases were about fraud, and we still have to figure out a way in shorthand to say it. But we need to do that. I know we're not doing a documentary here, but let me say some of the complaints were some of the complaints about the election had to do with the historic intersection we're at, partly because of COVID. We don't have one-day elections anymore. But the time to protest the procedures that all the thousands of jurisdictions that deal with elections in our country have, the time to protest that is before an election. And that's why you have in big campaigns an army of lawyers to do that. And you protest things that are to your advantage to complain about or try to change. And we also have in our system a point where the acceptance has to be of mail ballots and of early voting. That is what is at issue. And their misunderstanding, I think, fuels the idea of the rigged election, and why when you just say there are 60 cases and fraud wasn't proven, it's because we need to make this distinction that ballots were counted in stages And the only right number is the final number, because not all the buckets were counted at once. There is a way of trying to make this simple. So it would be like if you're at a ball game, and in the sixth inning, the Cubs are 5 and the Dodgers are 3. It's interesting, nice to know, but the game isn't over until 9 innings, and then maybe the Dodgers have 10 runs and the Cubs never got another one. No one would say that the Cubs were robbed of the game because they were ahead. You could even have a statistical sheet saying, you know, for 100 games, every time the Cubs were ahead in the third inning, they went on to win it. It's data without distinction. So I hope the person who sent in that question can appreciate that, yes, this election was different. That's why we had so many people vote, because voting was more than one day. All the votes were counted at the same time, but it doesn't mean that in every case there's fraud. And it is a kind of, I don't want to seem like I'm preaching a civics lesson here, but that's why it's on journalists to simply explain these things more, so that there could be perhaps a better reckoning for some people. And I know some people will never believe anything anyway, but I think some people just want to have things explained to them in a simpler way.
Yeah, no, that's great. I love the baseball analogy. And, you know, if you can't do context and a longer explanation on public radio, where can you do it? I want to go back to the phones. I should add, I'm talking with Lynn Sweet, bureau chief for the Chicago Sun-Times, Washington bureau chief for the Sun-Times. And and Jeremy Hobson, who is the former host of NPR's Here and Now, and also a native of Central Illinois. I want to go back to the phones. Steve on line 4, thanks for calling in. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I know time is very, very short, so I'll try to make some concise, quick comments and leave it to your guests to ponder. First off the bat, I wanted to say hello to Jeremy. Really missed him on Here and Now, especially his music segment, so I wish him
thank
well.
Thank you.
great discussion today. Just a couple of quick comments. I think, if truth be told, Donald Trump probably never really wanted to be president, never expected to win, and I think that's why his presidency was such a debacle. But I think the truth is that I think places like Fox News really should have blood on their hands, because I think what happened on the 6th was inevitable with everything going around. But my comment would be for your guests, wondering if they thought to equate Biden's presidency to FDR, given that FDR came in such a tumultuous time. Not that Hoover was not a politician. He was by trade, obviously, which, you know, is a comparison against Trump. But everything was going wrong, and FDR kind of put the country together on the same sheet of music and kind of turned things around. And I was wondering if your guests had comments on any or all of that, and I'll go ahead and ring off and listen. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling in, Steve. And Jeremy, what do you make of that? I mean, is Joe Biden what it would be? JRB is the new FDR? I mean,
I would say that, you know, he immediately took down the painting of Andrew Jackson in the Oval Office and replaced it with a painting of FDR. So that tells you something about where he would like to be in the sort of Hall of Presidents. I think it depends on what happens in the Senate. You know, you heard earlier this hour, Dick Durbin, it sounded like making the case that they are going to get rid of the filibuster. Or that they should get rid of the filibusters if the Republicans won't go along with them on certain things. If they can do that and start getting big things done with a Democratic House and a Democratic Senate, and obviously a Democrat in charge of the presidency, that could be pretty significant. I was talking to a very high-ranking staffer in Congress recently, but actually it was right before the Georgia election. And he said to me, you know, what people don't realize is if we win both of those seats, we being the Democrats, win both of those seats in Georgia, we're going to be able to do things on climate change that we have never been able to do. And if we don't, we won't. The you know, for people who think that climate change is is the most important issue of our time. And there are a lot of people in the Democratic Party who believe that. This is a real opportunity if the Democrats decide to use their power in the way, by the way, that President Trump did in his first 100 days. I was looking, you know, he got a Supreme Court justice, Gorsuch, the Muslim ban, immigration policies. He started to try to repeal and replace Obamacare, which, of course, he never did. Pulled the U.S. out of the TPP. There were a lot of things that he was able to do in the exact same position, basically, as Biden is in, with full control.
Lynn, we have maybe just a minute left. I wonder if you have a sense. FDR, of course, is the one who gave us this concept of 100 days as a target for action for a new president. What do you think people should be looking for from the Biden administration over the next months?
I can tell you one quick thing. You will have, when Biden signs his orders dealing with fighting the pandemic, mass vaccinations, mass testing, one thing he's going to use is a deployment of entities like the U.S. Public Health Corps. There's going to be hiring there. And I think one of the hallmarks of the FDR tenure was the CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps, of which there are many projects that remain in Illinois throughout the state built by this corps. We're not going to reinvent that, but I think you're going to see, as a way of also addressing the economic meltdown by the pandemic, a reliance on some of these federal entities to fight it, to have mass or big hirings in order to do two things at once: get out vaccines, get out testing, and give jobs.
Okay, and that is, I'm afraid, all the time we have. I do want to thank, we had a lot of callers we weren't able to get to this hour. We do appreciate you calling in. Nancy in McChesney Park wanted to say the speech was exceptional. Appreciated Biden's talking about a new beginning. Also, Michael in Rockford, who thought it was heartening to hear a Republican caller a little earlier. That was Tana, I think, in rural Menard County, just to hear her perspective on this. And then, Jeremy, I have to say, Ralph in Champaign also misses your voice and wants to hear about your future. So I don't know if you have anything briefly to say on that, or if we're just out of time.
No, I don't have anything specific to say, except that, you know, I miss being in the thick of it every day. It is nice to take a little break, but
yeah, absolutely.
I will be back in the media as soon as I can.
Jeremy Hobson is the former host of NPR's Here and Now. Lynn Sweet is the Washington Bureau Chief for the Chicago Sun-Times. Jeremy, Lynn, thanks so much for being with me today on the 21st.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Listeners, one more note. You heard a lot of text messages on the show today. We want to invite you to join our conversation through our Text the 21st group. You can join by texting the word TALK to 217-803-0730. We only send one, maybe two texts a week. Again, the word is TALK to 217-803-0730. Our program is produced by Anna Casey and Ryan Wild. Chantal Vaca is our engagement producer. Our interns are Zainab Qureshi and Briel Skullark. Technical direction from Jason Croft. Thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media.